All right, at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Seamus.
Good evening. My name is Seamus, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Al for inviting me and Jim for picking me up and taking me down. It's an absolute privilege to share at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome the new people. Welcome to AA. I got to tell you that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me. And I thought it was the worst thing when I got here. I'm enormously grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I grew up in the northwest coast of Ireland. I'm number 6 of 9. I can't prove it, but I believe I was born pissed off. I seem to come out with a lot of rage and anger right from the beginning. I grew up definitely in what would be considered an alcoholic environment. A lot of violence and a lot of insanity around alcohol. Somewhere in my 8th or 9th year, I figured out the correlation between my father's drinking and us not having anything, which led to a contentious and sometimes violent relationship. I don't know when I had my first drink. I do know when I had my first blackout drunk. It was sometime in my 13th year. And I didn't know that blackouts was a thing until I came to AA. It was a normal part of my drinking before. I didn't know that that was a problem. By the time I was 18, I was a seasoned drinker, and it had become part of my life. I thought all my problems was that I was Irish and in Ireland, so I wanted to get out of there. At 19, I headed off to Switzerland. And it seems that as soon as I got to Switzerland, I discovered I was Irish. I went out of my way to live up to their reputation for drinking and fighting and all that stuff. And when I was 22, I arrived in Venice Beach, California. And I thought it was 1980. I thought I had died and went to heaven. By then, I am a daily drinker, an unapologetic daily drinker. I also was a driven worker. I had a tremendous drive to work hard because I wanted so much to have a better life. And I was always trying to reconcile those drives. I like to share this story as an illustration of my denial of the disease of alcoholism. It was a couple of days before Christmas 1981. I had been drinking for many hours and had some other stuff too, and one of my co-workers was trying to get me to go home. I was living on Pacific and 23rd that time, and I don't know about you, but when I was on a run, I never wanted to stop. I always wanted another drink, and I insisted that we stop at, there was a bar at the end of Washington Boulevard there called the Sunset Saloon. It was a real toilet. And I was a regular there. And I insisted we stop there and get a drink. And we got the drink. I also got into a fight. And I got stabbed 5 times with 4 different knives. And when I was recovering in the hospital, I concluded that the main reason I went there that night was to get cigarettes. So I quit smoking. I never even considered stopping drinking. And I actually got indignant when some people like this wanted to suggest that it might have something to do with my drinking. I did not want to hear about that, and I would go on drinking for another 4 years and have many of what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous those pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizations. In the end, for me, I was 27 years of age. I was living in Culver City at that time, and I'd get up in the morning and I'd have a Black Beauty and a couple of beers. And for those of you that don't know what black beauties are, back in the 70s and 80s, they're street amphetamines. And I mention them because when you have my disposition for rage and anger, amphetamines do not help. And I would get up in the morning and have my black beauties and beers, and I would go off to work and yell and scream at people for 10 or 12 hours. And the best way I can describe the last couple of years of my drinking was that the music stopped. It became very dark. And I'd be driving to work in the morning, and I'd say, I'm not going to get that whiskey that night. And I always got the whiskey. And I found myself in a total place of despair, because I couldn't understand. I was sure that someone with my determination and my willpower, that this would not happen to me. I have no romantic notions of drinking. Like I said, I grew up with a lot of violence and insanity. I knew the darkness of that. I was so sure that I had got far enough away from it that but found out, no, it came right with me. And I think one of the reasons I am so in awe of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm halfway into a bottle of whiskey at the table, and by then there's no one around. A lot of my drinking at the end, I was isolated, I was alone. And I was fighting with everyone. I was fighting with my family, I was fighting with the people at work. I had something going with the guys on the gas station on the corner. I was just enraged all the time. I just was enraged. And I'm halfway into that bottle of whiskey, and I get to call the operator, and before I knew it, I was connected to some dude at AA Central Office in Los Angeles. And they wanted to come out and get me, and I said, no, just tell me where that meeting was, and you give me the address for the Marina Center. And then I continued drinking, and when I woke up that next morning, there was a drink there behind beside the bed, and I started drinking again. And I found myself back at that table again the next night into a bottle of whiskey, which was the pattern, right? And no one around, and I remember that piece of paper that I had written, and I was bouncing around looking for it, and I resolved that the next day I would check out AA. And when I woke up that morning, I didn't drink. That was September 24, 1985, and I've not had a drink since. I remember driving down Washington Boulevard to that meeting in the Marina Center and trying to talk myself out of going to AA. I was too young, I was overreacting, I was too Irish, all the reasons why I ought not to go in, and I was half expecting them to turn me away, but they didn't. They welcomed me in, and it was a speaker meeting much like this, and I'm one of those guys that have been blessed with miracles right from the beginning, and I say that because I did not believe in God and man. I've seen everything in terms of weakness and strength. And I've seen anything around religion and that, I've seen it as weakness. And I wanted no part of that. But I knew years before I walked into that meeting that I was an alcoholic. I knew at 18 that my drinking was not normal. And I experienced many of those pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizations. Now, that was not language that I used when I was drinking. But the speaker that night, he talked about that. Because I had experienced it many times when I looked into the eyes and the faces of the people I loved the most, and I could not explain why I did what I did. Because once I was drinking, I was gone. Didn't happen all the time, but when it happened, it happened. And I'm sitting in there listening to the speaker, and the miracle was that he was from the west of Ireland. and all the meetings that are in Los Angeles, and he was from different sides of the tracks than me, but I identified with him as an alcoholic, and I went up after the meeting to thank him, and he said, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" And I didn't tell him I was a psycho chef. I told him I was in the restaurant business, and he said, "I'd like you to come to the meeting with someone I'd like you to meet." And so I showed up at my second meeting, and this was to be the next miracle for me in AA. And I walked into that meeting. It was on Harvard Street in Santa Monica. And I recognized that man that was standing with that guy immediately, and I was not keen to see him. He was the president of the restaurant company I had quit on 5 months prior. And that guy always made me feel uncomfortable. I always felt like he could see right through me. And of course, I have learned in AA, we alcoholics are quite transparent to one another. But also, he made me uncomfortable. He was educated and wealthy, and those things intimidated me. But most of all, he was English, and I just didn't like him. And I share that because he was the guy that was to call me the next day to see how it was going, and he was to call me for the next few weeks to see that I was getting to meetings, and I knew at that first meeting, I'm not an intellectual, I'm not an educated man, I was not capable of comprehending the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on my own, but I had an intuitive feeling deep that there was something here. I did not want to drink again. My biggest fear was that I would not be good enough to stay here. And I found myself 3 or 4 weeks into this thing, I couldn't believe that I wasn't drinking. I wasn't going any steps or anything. I was just showing up at the meeting. And by the way, there was no one hugging me or any of that stuff. I was not into that stuff. But I wanted so much not to drink. And I remember there was a voice screaming in my head, "Do not do it." I asked that English guy to be my sponsor. And I didn't realize then that I was doing what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous taking contrary action. That if I wanted a different life, I was going to have to do things differently. And he said to me, "Seamus, I'm going to tell you in language that you understand. You're in the food business. You are a cucumber that became a pickle. You are never going to be a cucumber again. So drinking is out for you. You don't drink no matter what." And he said, "I know you have a lot of concern about understanding the program. We're not going to wait around for you to get understanding, because quite frankly, we've been here forever. We're going to get started on the steps, and the understanding will come." And that was to be my experience. And he said, "I know you have a lot of energy on this God thing. The only thing you need to understand is it's not you." And with that, we started on the steps right away. And I got to tell you, I was to thrive in AA. I embraced it right from the beginning. Went on the steps. I was 10 months sober. I went to my sponsor and said, "Hey, I want to go to Ireland. There was a wedding going, a family wedding." He said, "Yeah, sure." He said, "But I'd like you to do the 8-step before you go, and maybe you could make some amends while you're there." Turns out I wasn't too keen on that. So I would call him when I knew he wasn't there. I would go to meetings where I knew he wouldn't be, and I was basically trying to run down the clock. This was in the 80s before the cell phones and all that. But he tracked me down and insisted that I get that 8-step and make some amends And the reason I share that is because my first take is nearly always wrong. My big concern about the eighth step and the ninth making amends, I was concerned about making financial amends. I can tell you now that making those financial amends was the least significant of them all. And I remember at the beginning he said to me, Seamus, the hardest place for you to work the steps will be with the family, but the rewards will be the greatest. And that was to be my experience. A couple of years into my sobriety, I got a job with a big hotel company, and when I was 5 years sober, they gave me a promotion and sent me down to San Diego. And that was the first time in sobriety that I kind of ran into trouble, and I didn't realize it because I was so used to running around the meetings in West LA, and everybody knew me and I knew everybody, and then all of a sudden I'm in San Diego and I don't know anyone, and they do the meetings differently down there upon me, and I was really struggled. And now the sort of, just to give you an idea, couple of months before I was to move down, I was in a speaker meeting like this with my sponsor, and the speaker that night was from San Diego, and the speaker, my sponsor said, yeah, here you go. Go up, get his phone number. You're all set, right? So I went up and thanked him, got his phone number. So I moved down to San Diego in September. I didn't call him until I was in a lot of pain at the end of December. You know, my sponsor says the whole thing of the steps is to uncover, discover, and discard. But some of you guys, and you're in that group, James, you want to uncover, discover, and wallow a little bit before you take action. And it seemed it was pain. And I called that guy, and then I ran into a bunch of Irish guys down in San Diego. So we decided to start a meeting for Irish guys only. We were unique, and these bloody Americans, they didn't understand our sensitive natures, and so we set that meeting for Irish guys only. It went great for a while until we started fighting among ourselves. And I like to share that to remind myself that I'm capable of rationalizing anything. When I was in my ninth year, that English guy called me. He had become a president of another restaurant company up in L.A., a big place in Malibu and in Beverly Hills, and he'd like me to come back and be the head chef, and it was a huge opportunity. And so I went back, and I remember here I'm coming up on 10 years sober. There's no doubt in my mind that I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. I have no doubt in my mind that I'm an alcoholic. And I thought this was the promises come true for me. I got a lovely apartment up on the hills and Palisades over Sunset Boulevard, and this was a great opportunity. And then my old nemesis came back, and my nemesis was anger and rage. And I was seeing a psychiatrist in Malibu, and I was working with some guys in the program on the steps for my anger, and I was getting more pissed off by the day. And the day before my 11th AA birthday, that English guy fired me, and I was absolutely devastated. All my life I have been a super employee. I was a driven worker. I wasn't a very good co-worker. But I was always a super employee, and he didn't fire me because I didn't show up or any of that stuff. I had become such a perfectionist at work, I had to come and hire it. And I had really hurt a lot of people. If you didn't move quick enough, think quick enough, I just ran over you. And I always had the idea and had the reputation, you know, when you get stabbed 5 times before different nights, you get the reputation of being fearless. But it was complete nonsense. I was driven by fear. I was totally driven by fear, the whole thing that nothing was good enough, everything had to be perfect, and at the beginning I was devastated. I called one of the guys from the men's meeting, and he must have known that I was in trouble, because I really was close to going out drinking as ever I was at that time, and he asked me to come to his house. And when I got there and he wasn't there, his wife locked me in a room for an hour until he got home. And I found out that it's the same program when you're 11 years and crazy as when you're brand new. It's 90 meetings and 90 days. And I had to start, and I had made a lot of mistakes. I had become arrogant. I forgot that this was a gift. I didn't have a passive acquaintance with empathy for others. I would sit in the rooms judging people, lazy, they're not doing all that. I have totally lost my way. And the ironic thing, a lot of those people that I had judged were some of the first people that were coming to help me when I was in trouble. And then that hotel company that I had worked on, they wanted me back. There was a big seafood restaurant company in San Francisco, and I was out in Baltimore in a hotel. And I was, at that time I had started writing, just no script, just writing to try to get some clarity, because my emotions and my fear and my anger, it was just all running around. And I also at that time was got myself back into meetings every day, sometimes many a day, working with a lot of people. And because I found out what Bill Wilson learned in that hotel in Akron, and that 6 months, when you're crazy like that, the only thing to do is to work with somebody else. And I'm writing, and I discovered that I hated what I was doing. I have been doing this since 1975, but I did not want to do it anymore. And that was the big fear. And I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to do that. And with that, I told those guys in Baltimore, thank you, and I went back to California. And decided just to go to a lot of meetings and try to figure out what I'm going to do. And then I had to confront that if I wanted a new life, I was to clean up. I had to clean up the mess I had made. And it's very sobering to have to make amends. And you can't blame it on drugs or alcohol, just that you're crazy. The last amends was with that English guy. And it didn't go well. I had said and done things that I shouldn't have done when I was angry, but I made the amends, and that's all I could do. And I also realized I hadn't even been praying right, especially with work. For me, my job was my whole identity. I never really surrendered that to anybody, but I was praying all the time. Sometimes in those dark days, I was on my knees 3 times a day, and it didn't help me, because I was making demands. I wasn't asking for direction, and so I started a practice of praying and just sitting quietly with my eyes closed and tried to listen. And there was a little guy that used to run around AA West LA, his name was Jack Rosenbaum. He's passed away now. I kept seeing him in my mind's eye. And I knew him just to say hi in the meetings. You know how we know people in the meetings. And I didn't even have his phone number. I had to go through a couple of people to get it, and I called them. And he said, yeah, Seamus, let's meet for a morning meeting, and we'll go for breakfast. We met at the 6:45 meeting in the Marina Center where I first got sober, and we went for breakfast, and I told him my tale of woe. And 3 weeks later, I was on a flight to Orlando for training. And it talks about that in the 12 and 12, that in the end, when you work the steps and you make the amends, in the end, it's just handed to you. It was, I didn't have to struggle. I just showed up at that breakfast, and the job literally was just laid at my feet. And I ended up, I was headed off to Orlando, and we went in. It was a national company, and I'm sitting in the room, 45 of us from all over the country. And so they decided, well, let's go around and introduce yourselves and tell us what college you're from, what college you attended, right? So the 45, there was one guy that hadn't gone to college. That was me. And I remember on the break calling the guys, I was freaking out. My inferiority kicked in. I hadn't gone to college. Everyone else had gone to college. And I just said, hey, if you're meant to be there, you'll be there. And if you're not, you won't. You just show up, do the best you can. And today, actually, March 2 years, I retired from that company after 23 years, 3 months, and 26 days. And that is a tribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because left to my own devices, I would have blown that up many times. And I got to tell you, a couple of months before I retired, I was at a national meeting with some of the senior management. And I was standing there, and some young lady came up to introduce herself to the management guy. She had been a new account executive that was hired at one of the divisions. And she said, oh, this is Seamus from Los Angeles. And she said, oh, I heard of you. You're the guy that helps the new people. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the same. What I learned here in the program, I took out to my work and to my family. It works. And I told you at the beginning that I was number 6 of 9 kids. When I was 13, our mother got sick suddenly and passed away. And my dad, who was always a drinker, climbed into a bottle. And within 10 months, he was gone. And the way I describe it, we were, the inmates had taken over the asylum. The oldest was 21 and the youngest was 5. And we were like billiard balls just bouncing off one another. And all I wanted to do was to get as far away as possible from that. And I did. I got over to California. But in May of 2000, we organized a family reunion. It was to be the first time in 25 years that all 9 siblings had been together. And we came from California, New York, Australia, and of course Ireland. And we had planned a mass and a dinner. But that morning I found myself at a meeting of AA, just like this, with 3 of my brothers. And I remember sitting there at that meeting. Again, it was one of those times when I was just in awe of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I never imagined that first meeting when I walked into AA, how profoundly AA would change my life and change my family. And I remember sitting there, closing my eyes, and in my mind's eye, I could see my parents smiling. The four of their sons were sitting in the meeting of our fathers and all that. And I don't know if this is a family disease. I'm not educated in that way. I know that out of nine of us, four of us ended up in AA. And so whatever you get from that. And I also don't take the disease of alcoholism for granted. It's a deadly disease because one of those brothers never could get sober. He wanted to get sober. And he passed away at 50, and one of the other brothers in New York, he did get sober, and he was to pass away at 29 years sober. Actually, 29 and a half of them, he stopped and went down. I put my 30-year chip on. I knew he was going to be good. He was going to get it. And he got a whole new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then that other brother, when he was 10 or 11 years sober, decided that maybe he overreacted. And he went out and done some more research. And he told me that he always thought, well, if things get bad, I can always go back. And he said he had a very hard time getting back. It got really dark, and he's back now 8 or 9 years, but it was really difficult for him to get back. So I don't take this disease lightly, and I'm enormously grateful that I stay close to AA, because I know I still possess the ability to blow up my life left to my own devices. I never like to talk about relationships at the podium. I never like people to talk about relationships. Never went well for me. I'm sure it had nothing to do with my anger and rage issues. But I found myself, it was a 2005, I just came in the fall of 2005, I just came out of another relationship, and one of the guys I was sponsoring was trying to make me feel better. He was quoting that part in the 12 step and the 12 and 12, that some of us never do get it. Maybe we just go on to be prodigies of service, and I wasn't too keen about that, you know. And I went to the store on a Sunday evening. I ran into an old Irish couple that I knew, and they invited me to a party the next Sunday. I agreed because I was in some people-pleasing mode. I immediately regretted that I said yes, and I kept saying all week, I'm not going to that party. And when I woke up that Sunday morning, I said, I'm definitely not going to that party. And then I went out for a run in the afternoon and kind of reminded myself that in AA, when we say we're going to do something, we do it. So I showed up in my running clothes. My plan was to stay there for 10 or 15 minutes and get out of there. But I met her, and I was one of the last people to leave that party that night. It was to be a little bit of a whirlwind romance, and then we were at a party on New Year's Eve, and she fell sick, and next day she went to the ER, and she got diagnosed with stage 3 ovarian cancer. I was not sure what that was, but I knew it wasn't good. And I got to tell you, another reason I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, because my first impulse was, I'm out of here. This is much more than I signed up for. And I'm so grateful that through my family and the people in AA that reminded me that I'm supposed to live one day at a time. Why am I off in the future? So she went and she had the surgery, and then when she was going through the chemo, I would pick her up and bring her back to my house, and I'm capable of cooking. I'm well trained. And one time she was having really hard time with the chemo, and I put her into bed, and And the only way I can explain it is when I was putting her to bed, it was like my heart just cracked open. And when I walked out of that room that night, I knew from then on I would be there for her, no matter what. And so we continued with the chemo stuff, and she was born in Los Angeles, but her dad was from Ireland. So I wanted to give her something to look forward to. I said, hey, I'll take you to Ireland for Christmas. And so in Christmas of 2006, we headed off. And while we were in Leitrim, that was where her dad grew up, we got engaged. And then she said to me, hey, Seamus, let's get married in Ireland. And I said, I ain't getting married in Limerick. So we headed up north, up to Sligo, to my part of the country, and with my older brother chauffeuring us around, we took care of the church and the reception, the music, the transportation. I even got my tucks organized in that short time. And then in October of 2007, 30 years after I had left Ireland, we went back and we got married in that little church outside, and had the reception in the castle, where I'm pretty sure some of my ancestors tried to burn down. And I remember sitting at that table in that castle and looking out at the family, and just again being in awe of the program, because if I had listened to myself, I wouldn't be there. I would have run away. I would have missed it all. And there was people in that family, in that reception, that had never been in the same room together. And that was the result of that first 8 and 9 steps and making amends and reaching out and building bridges. And that night, they were all out dancing on the floor, and I looked out. It was 1:30 in the morning, and I seen this guy with a big smile on his face dancing. Who was it but that bloody English guy? And I share that because sometimes when you make amends, the healing doesn't come straight away, but it does come. And that relationship had become better than ever. And he had come 6,000 miles to be there for that, you know. And I remember sharing that with him when I got back to California, and he reminded me that the theme of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is the joy of living. And at the beginning, we had prayed and hoped for a miracle, but the nature of cancer is sometimes it comes back, and initially we fought it, and we fought it for a couple of years, but in the fall of 2013, came back and it was different, and I found myself in the hospital with my wife, and the doctors called me in and said there's nothing they can do, and take her home, and this, my wife did not want to die in the hospital, she wanted to die at home, and I remember standing there with those doctors, and I did not want to give up. I mean, everything in my, and I remember she touched my arm because I did not want to accept that it was over. And so we took her home, and I share that because I never had it inside of me. There was never any Nurse Nightingale inside busting to get out. That wasn't who I was, you know, but this was important to me. And they told me in AA that one of the gifts of society is that we get the ability to learn, and I could learn. And she had a port on her chest that they used to use for the chemo, so we used that to hook up the machine so she could get the morphine and they could monitor it off-site. And 1:30 in the morning, the bloody thing starts blinking. I jump out of bed and hoping to keep her from waking up. And on the phone with the help desk, and freaking out, and my head is all over the place, and it took everything I had to calm down and let the technician talk me through and get it back on track. And when I hung up and everything was good, she woke up, but she had been awake all the time. She just didn't want to add any pressure to me as I was working through this. And that's when I knew that I had to take this a day at a time, and I had to learn. And I had only one time. There was no do-over. I had just one chance, and I had to do it to show up every day and as it unfolded and learn, and I did. And the interesting thing for me is that who came to me was not my, who came to me was my father. And that surprised me, because I never had a really good relationship with my father, but when I thought about it, I was the same age as he was then. That time when his wife died, and unfortunately he had 9 kids and no resources. And he climbed into a bottle, and I realized that now I was walking in his shoes. And I got enormous gratitude for being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I did have the resources to deal with what was coming up, and I was sober and I was able to walk through it. And when the event happened, I was really angry. That old anger and rage came back like never before, but this time I was aware that I had to be, just take it a day at a time. My prayer was, day at a time, don't drink no matter what, and don't do anything goofy, and just show up, and because I was ready to lash out at anybody. I was just that crazy, and I would come to meetings and I didn't want to share, I just wanted to just sit there, and it took time, and I was in a lot of pain. Now I went back to work, I buried my wife on Thursday, I went back to work on Monday, and which was good for me. I was an outside sales guy, and it was good, I'd get out, but I'd come back on a Friday night, and it would be like the darkness descended on me. And one of my guys, you know him, Josh, he kept calling me, "Seamus, you got to get out of there. Come up to the men's meeting in San Luis Obispo on Friday night." And again, he started calling me in February. I didn't show up at that meeting until May. So, you know, that whole thing is not... Someone gave me the solution. I didn't embrace it right away. It seemed that I had to suffer a little more. But I showed up at that meeting, and there was a couple of guys there. I said, "Hey, we meet for dinner before the meeting. Why don't you show up?" And I showed up, and two of them, Max and Pat, had lost their wives. Max only 6 years before. And so showing up at that meeting every Friday night, and then going to the meeting, things changed. And I was at a business meeting in Orange County. I get out and I looked at my watch, and I'm like, I can make the dinner in the meeting. And I just realized at that time that things had changed. In time, the anger, the pain dissipates. And I didn't even realize it. It all had changed, and I was on my way. And that meeting wasn't any different than any other meeting. It was that I had taken the action. And I got to tell you, I'm enormously hopeful and optimistic for the future. And the reason is, I have 36 years of experience that tells me that I don't need to know what's ahead of me. All I need to do is not drink, not use, show up at meetings, and everything will be just fine. And that's what I'm doing, and that's what I intend to do. And I'm, when I came to AA, I always was on the lookout for enemies, and I always had a lot of enemies. And I found out that I have only one enemy. His name is Seamus. And if I just keep an eye on him, everything is fine. Al, thank you for inviting me. I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Give him another hand.